Hello. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back to Talk Openly. I'm Jack, and I'm here with my excellent friend Daniel. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Jack. I'm so happy to be with you on Talk Openly tonight. I'm super excited.
I'm also super excited. Yeah, and we're going to be talking about a topic that is just kind of, ubiquitous. We've got to talk about it all the time, is meditation challenges and solutions. So, we'll be talking about our own experiences and hearing a little bit about what we've learned and, which we got some good experience under our belts now, but we're still vastly beginners.
That if the experience that I do have has taught me anything, it is that I am a beginner.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. How are you, Jack?
I'm a mixed bag as usual. Yeah, life is good. I visited Sacramento this weekend, got to see some friends, so that was very nice. But underneath, like, my whole friend time was that I also, for school, I had to add a whole other class to my schedule. Last week on, I think it was on Wednesday, I got an email from my advisor to, it was like kind of an all cohort email. So I didn't take it too seriously, but it was like, go ahead and check your, report on, how you're doing with your progress. And I was kind of like, meh, I don't really need to do it. I'm fine. I know I'm good. I'm on top of things. And then something was just kind of like talking to me, where I was like, eh, I'm gonna go ahead and do it. So I run the report and talk to my advisor, and turns out I had a whole other elective that I had to take
Oh gosh.
where I wouldn't be ready to graduate in June if I didn't add a whole class to my
Ooh.
schedule
Ooh.
this semester.
Is that gonna
So,
throw you off? Like a
well, I fortunately so I was past the time that I could add a class myself, but with permission from the instructor by last Friday, I could add it. So I was like down to the wire. It was like I had to contact
Like you
all these.
slid right underneath that.
Yeah, I really did. It was, yeah, I it was Wednesday was an extremely stressful day. But I ended up getting into a class after emailing all these professors, like, hello. It's very nice to meet you. I am interested in your course and need to get in. And
Let me in now.
it was interesting because, we're learning how to watch our minds and whatnot, especially in times of stress. And so I was like just kind of watching it, and I was having a little bit of the kind of like hyperventilating panic mind. And at the same time, there was this really rational mind that was like, hey, buddy, let's say you don't get into a class. What's going to happen? You're going to do a class in the summer or take three classes in the spring. Like, there's going to be a solution, right? Like, and none of it is permanent. And so both of those minds were happening at the same time, and sure enough, I got into a class. So it's fine. I'm just catching up. But it was a little bit rough because that was kind of the undercurrent of like meeting with friends, and hanging out at Temple. But I was able to put that way back here, and just have a good time. So that's kind of how I'm doing.
Good. I like it. They truly a mixed bag. Huh. I like it. Like a little potpourri.
A little potpourri. Yeah, and practice, right? We have to turn everything into the path. Otherwise, we're just, interested in Dharma when things are going good, right? It's so easy. What's that quote? It's like, it's a teacher, that made this quote. It's amazing. Like, it's so easy to be a Buddhist when, everything's going right. It's just so
Yeah,
fun to be a
that's
Buddhist. How great. But then the second things, don't go my way, no longer a Buddhist.
yeah, boy. Oh, I'm so compassionate. I'm so enlightened. I'm so wise. I'm so whatever. I'm such a good meditator, and I read Dharma books and receive teachings and I go to empowerment and all of that. But then when the going gets tough, all of a sudden, whoops, right? Exactly. It's easy to fall into that kind of a space. But when the going gets tough is exactly when we need it the most. It's also the most fruitful time, actually. Like you were saying, watching the mind, particularly when we're stressed, it's really effective. It's super helpful on the one hand, but I'm just saying it's effective at seeing seeing what's going on in the mind, because it's sort of like standing out a bit more than usual, right? Like the various troubles, whatever, the various thought patterns that keep looping and stuff like that, that are sort of the cause a lot of that stress, become a lot more visible. So it's almost easier to see when things are heightened.
And it also, of course, heightens whatever afflictions we're really prone to. Like self-centeredness was there, of course, for me, where I was just like, why won't these teachers get back to me? After like an hour after emailing them, when it's we're 2 weeks into the semester, like people have things to do, right? Like they're not thinking about like students who haven't gotten a class, right? Like it's so, there, and what other so many other afflictions arising, but mostly that one where like the self-centered, also kind of like frustrated with myself kind of neurosis. So yeah, it was all there and really fascinating to watch the cascade happen.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad that you had the opportunity for the practice, and I'm actually really glad that the professor was able to add you. That's
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, me too. Yeah. Well, how are you doing, buddy? What's going on for you?
I'm good. Also, similar life situation has my stress levels up a bit. It's interesting. Besides observing our thoughts and whatnot, we can actually observe our behavior as well. And I can tell, interestingly enough, I can tell that I'm actually under more stress than I have been in the last year or so, because an old habit returned.
Oh, fascinating.
Biting my nails.
Biting your nails,
Yeah,
yes.
so I was a nail biter my whole life, right? And had a heck of a time with it. Never, like it was so hard to avoid biting my nails. I don't know. It's a weird sort of obsessive sort of thing, right? And then somehow, as a, it was basically right around the time that I took refuge, which was a little over a year ago now. I completely stopped biting my nails. It never even didn't even occur to me. It just dropped, like wasn't there. And now all of a sudden I'm like, oh gosh, okay, it's back, right? And then I can tell, I know, I'm like, oh, I see, this is like some kind of a stress response thing, and so yeah, anyway, that's been kind of that part was mildly interesting, but generally speaking, things are good. I like busy, long days from early morning till relatively late at night, and it's satisfying. At the end of the day, I'm like, whew, I'm done. Still working, it's over. And so it's deeply satisfying on that, and on one hand, but also there's less room for me time.
Me
Right?
time,
Yeah. Yeah, which is actually probably okay. It's all okay. But yeah, no, it's been just a ton of work, and just life changes, whatnot. But overall, good. I was very pleased. One of my really, really good friends came to visit this weekend, and I had such a good time hanging out with them.
What's funny is that really like the like when you first said that I really was like, oh, really? I'm so interested to hear about the
Oh, well, of course you're interested in yourself, Jack.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Very interested.
No, but that was such a just so good for me.
It
And
was. Oh, I want to admit, Oh, sorry, I spoke over you, but I wanted to mention to everyone that there's this non-alcoholic bar that we went to, and it was the coolest thing. It was all of these like fancy beverages that didn't have alcohol. They were like made of other concoctions, but it was just kind of fun to like hang out with friends at a space and socialize
Yeah.
and like have like a fancy little beverage, but not get drunk and not, you know, and you don't need more than one non-alcoholic drink. So it was
No,
like
right. Exactly.
just spent the money on the first round and we're done. It was
Yeah.
great.
And it served its purpose, right? There was space. There was something enjoyable, something that was unique, different, that could have kind of sensory pleasure or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was really perfect for that kind of socialization. It was great. And I thought it was so cool that I would think that a non-alcoholic bar would be empty, right? But now it was popping. There were a
It was
lot of people
packed.
there. Yeah, a lot of
They had
people.
to add tables.
Yeah, a lot of people were into that. So yeah, that was a really cool experience for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called the Tito Taylist, and it's on I Street for those who are
In Sacramento.
in Sacramento, for those who aren't drinking alcohol and would like to every once in a while have something fancy.
Yep, exactly. So I have something slightly different to report as well. It's related to practice. So part of what I'm a little bit stressed out right now about is I have a talk coming up on Sunday, right? And yeah, that's not my reaction right now.
Sorry.
So this is my second talk. It's on a topic that was assigned to me, I assume because I really need to learn about it. And that's right effort is the topic, or joyful effort, di aka diligence, enthusiasm, persistence, that kind of thing, which for most of my life has not been my cup of tea. What I really find fascinating about the experience, though, is that sort of like dwelling in this space of learning about effort, in a Buddhist framework from many different teachers, and doing it over a period of time, sort of immersed in it, has given me a lot of opportunity to reflect on it, right? That's, I think, part of the reason why it's so cool that we get to do these talks. And it's been fascinating sort of to watch as my meditations reveal some neuroses, right? So one of the things that I find really kind of interesting is that, so a while ago, my brother, who's a psychologist, he accused me of being a, oh my good, not a, not a, not paranoid, but pronoid.
What pronoid?
The opposite of paranoid. Like, so it's like paranoia, except it's on the positive end of the spectrum. And so
So you're almost like kind of like a like a dead fish or something. I just imagine like just not responding. You're just like kind of not. Is that
Well, in a weird sort of way, yes, but it kind of is characterized by is by this deep sense that the universe is conspiring for my personal benefit,
Oh, interesting. Okay.
right? And so
Yeah.
it does actually lead in a weird sort of way towards the dead fish sort of thing, because so that's the funny thing about it. Here I am thinking a lot about effort, exerting energy, right? Directing energy in a particular direction, sustaining that over time, right? Me doing that work, right? But most of my life has been characterized by this sort of like free floating, like it's all gonna work out. Like I'm just gonna like go where the winds take me, and it's gonna be fine. Even if in the moment it doesn't look like it's working out, it's gonna work out. It's fine. And probably all the in my mind, all the bad things that sort of come up, I'm like, well, the reason, if I'm late to this, it's okay because maybe it's saving me from a car crash, or it's like it's this
Just
really,
making everything, yeah, a positive.
I didn't really appreciate it when my brother accused me of that, right? But I thought it was funny, but it turns out, like, actually, I've been aware of the fact that I have this sort of like magical thinking, that's really kind of extreme, related to the fact that everything's gonna work out just fine. Right? It doesn't actually need me to do anything. right? I can just be like an otter, you know, like a sea otter in the ocean, just like
Yeah.
floating along and, you know, not really like needing to do anything myself is sort of like the way that things have been sort of characterized. That's sort of my disposition. So it's been really interesting to see that particular, because I've always thought like, well, at least it's on the positive side of things, right? Like, sure,
Yeah.
maybe it is that way, but you know, like it is actually all kind of working out, right?
Yeah,
It
yeah.
kind of is, except when it doesn't, because sometimes it
Except when it doesn't. Yeah, because sea otters do get eaten by orcas, unfortunately.
This is true. And also, sea otters do need to exert themselves at
They
times,
do. They
right?
actually do quite a lot of work, right? They're
That's
there
right.
laying on their belly, like smacking shells together and stuff.
Find each other and hold hands and stuff like that and float, find kelp to like anchor them and all of that, right? And so, yeah, it's been really interesting sitting with this, where on the one hand, because what's really frustrating is I'm giving this talk about effort, and all I really know is its opposite, right? Which is characterized by these different forms of laziness, right? And that's like, oh, yeah, I identify with that. I'm like, yeah, I know that. I clearly, like, we don't even need to talk about that. I know that inside and out. I've plumbed its depths. I'm an expert, right? The other side, effort part of it, more challenging, right? So that's the benefit again of giving the talk. But at the same time, because I'm so steeped in this subject matter right now, that's the background against which my meditation, my practice, my training, everything is against that backdrop. And there's this sort of like, huh, you're gonna do this, Daniel? Like, are you go you're gonna follow this advice? Like, you're reading it, you're hearing it, you're understanding it. Are you gonna apply it? Are you actually gonna do this, right? And so it's a strange place to be, because on the one hand, I'm really grateful. I'm like, yeah, this is learning, this is training, this is, you know, understanding better, this is seeing myself more clearly. And yet there's a part to it that I really don't like, you know. There's this part of me around that really doesn't like it, you know. Then when I recognize, like, oh crap, this means change, and like I have to do that change, right?
Yeah, it means change, and that yeah, for good things to come our way, and the types of realizations that we're seeking, that we have to put in some time. We got to put in some time, and we
Yeah.
got to apply ourselves.
And we can't not give up, right? We gotta keep
Yeah,
going, gotta
damn
keep going,
it.
you know? And so I'm gonna do, I think what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna keep the sea otter sort of metaphor alive in my life. But I'm gonna open my eyes up a little bit more and recognize that the sea otter's life is not just about floating along on the waves, holding hands and sleeping, right? And that actually there's more to it than just that. And so we'll see if I can't be a little bit more otter.
Totally. Well, I'm so excited to listen to your talk, and I won't ask for any spoilers, but yeah, I have a feeling it's gonna be really relevant for all of us. No matter where we are on that kind of spectrum with diligence, we gotta keep coming back to it.
Yeah.
It's and I love what you said about that we're probably a lot of times Lama Jinpa gives us things to work on that are not necessarily our, kind of habitual nature. They are our Buddha nature, right? But they're not our kind of habitual, conventional nature.
All right. So one of, according to a little online quiz, my Buddha nature, they're divided into five families. That's a way to talk about it, right? And my predominant Buddha nature is, or yeah, my
Buddha family.
Buddha family rather, is the Buddha family, right? Which has this positive characteristic of openness, spaciousness, stuff like that. So that's all good. But through you know, when it's when it's showing up through a delusional mindset or whatever it is, then it shows up oftentimes as indifference and lazy. It's actually laziness, right? And so it's kind of funny. I can't help but laugh and be like, well, I mean,
It keeps showing
I am sort of right, right? I am kind of like that. And if I want the positive side of my Buddha family, if I want to manifest that, then I'm gonna have to put in some effort. Because otherwise, without putting in some effort, I'm gonna be manifesting the negative side of that, which is something that I'm very familiar with.
Right.
cool, indifferent, not really caring.
Yeah,
Right.
totally. It can so easily drift into nihilism, right?
Yeah,
Where it's like, yeah, because apathy and laziness, they don't necessarily sound like too bad, right? Like they don't have a great tone to the words, but they're not like kind of like hopeless, but they can easily slide. Like there's just this creep into nihilism that kind of like laziness or not really caring too much about what happens, or and so it's really like one of those that you got to be careful with.
You got to be careful with it, because at the end of the day, none of the good things that we hope for, whatever they are, going to come our way without some effort,
Yeah,
So
for sure.
I can't just ride whatever positive karma, whatever good merit I have. I don't want to just ride that out,
Yeah,
I want to build up some more, and that gotta apply myself. So that's part of the rub about what's going on, right? I said, yeah, I've got busy life, busy this, all kinds of stuff going on, and then I'm preparing for this talk, and I'm like, this isn't like an easy talk. I mean, the subject matter is totally easy, right? Like anybody could probably talk about that. But on a personal level, it's not easy.
for sure.
I'm like,
No,
well,
it's great.
I don't like this one. I wish I
I
could do something different,
wanted to do something
Yeah.
fun. Can I ask, what's your Dharma name? Do you remember?
Yashi Trinley, which
And
is an enlightenment activity, or so not the Yeshu, the Trinley part is enlightenment activity. Yeah.
That's so great. I
I
mean,
know. I'm glad you asked. I've been okay, so somebody told me, before I got my name, that I was asking something about what the Dharma names were like, and they said, well, it's easy to receive your Dharma name and think, oh, that describes who I am already.
yeah, that's
Oh,
me.
lovely.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Daniel or Yeshe Trinley, enlightenment activity. Yay, that's me. I'm already there, right? And then they were like, well, but actually, it sort of indicates maybe something that you need to work on as well, right? Maybe something that you already have, the potential there for, but something that you also need to work on developing,
It's so funny. Yeah. So my Dharma name is Yeshe Lackey, which the translation for lackey is goddess of joy, which like I'm laughing, so maybe that means I'm joyful, but like I actually like depression is a major thing for me, and just feeling like really grunt, like just like I'm always in the grind, like that kind of feeling. And so, and like goddess of joy, what do you think is like Tara, right? You think of like these like beings made of light who are just emanating joy and compassion and love. And I'm like, I'm like, I feel like just such a mess most of the time, you know? So I love that because it's, you know, that is, it's laughable, right? But it's like that's
It's
what I
just sort of like, oh, it's sort of like the talk itself, right? Where I'm like, oh, it's not because I'm already there. It's because that's what I should be focusing on.
For sure. And that's just, yeah, that's so great. It's like, well, then that's I'm gonna learn something from exploring this. So that's fabulous. Well, Daniel, should we explore some Lojong? We're gonna do some mind training. It's a good place to start.
It is. Let me share my screen.
And Daniel right now is pulling up the Lion's Roar Dharma Center random Lojong slogan generator. I feel like we should have that on an echo. You
Ooh,
know,
that'd be kind of
like
cool.
be like announced at like a basketball game or something.
Yeah, or like if we were like radio talk, like a morning radio talk show, we could add all kinds of like.
Yes. Burr, 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 burr,
Yeah, well,
burr.
we as always are incredibly grateful for this wonderful tool that our friend Dirk built on the lionsroardharmacenter.org website. And I'm going to push the button right now for a random Lojong slogan.
All
So,
right, number 50. I think it's a new one for us. What do you think,
it is.
Daniel?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Don't depend on external conditions. So, what does Choyum Trungpa have to say about this? So, although your external circumstances may vary, your practice should not be dependent on that. Whether you are sick or well, rich or poor, have a good reputation or bad reputation, you should practice Lojong. It is very simple. If your situation is right, breathe that out. If your situation is wrong, breathe that in.
Oh,
Oh.
that's talking about at the outset of the show, right? Like
Yeah.
just that. Good advice for sure. It doesn't matter actually what's going on, whether you're at the top of the wave or in the bottom of the trough. You want to keep on riding, right? Keep practicing. I
This is
love
such a good one for your talk, right?
Yeah.
Because diligence is so necessary to ensure that no matter the external condition, we're still coming to our training and we're still willing to apply Lojong to our life.
I'm gonna take a screenshot of it. Maybe I
What's
can.
that?
Maybe I just took a screenshot of it. Maybe I can put it
Good. Well, and how lovely is that kind of turn of phrase in that last sentence there? I thought he was going to say breathe out, right, for both of them. But instead, so if your situation is right, breathe that out. If your situation is wrong, breathe that in.
the
How
top.
beautiful is that?
That one for a minute. That seems like a sentence that or an observation that will deepen.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, those situations that we feel are like, this is where I want to be. This is how I feel good right now. I feel like me, right? We have to be able to let that go. You know, our attachments are really making us suffer. And then same thing, you know, with if the situation all is just like shit and everything's not going our way, welcome it. You know, welcome it. It's our training. It's teaching us something. It's purification. It's all the things, you know, welcome it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It reminds me, I have a book that is various songs. I think they were all written by Dujom Rinpoche, but at the very least, the one that comes to mind was certainly written by him. And the whole premise of it, I can't remember how it all goes, but it's incredibly beautiful to read, where basically he goes through all these situations, like, okay, so things are really good, and you have a lot of money, and you got a lot to eat. Well, be grateful because that gives you opportunity to practice Dharma, and like that's all right. That's all right. It's not like super amazing, awesome. It's just all right. It's okay. You got what you need. Now go practice Dharma, right? And then on the flip side, oh, you're poor. You're broke. You don't have anything. You're in this desperate situation. Oh, that's all right too, right? That also gives you a great opportunity to practice Dharma, right? And so I think that that's sort of the same kind of thing here, right? Like that it doesn't really actually matter what's going on. It's exactly what you said at the outset of the show, which is it's all the path, right? We bring it all.
For sure. Yeah, and honestly, I feel like there's like this little sweet spot, right? Well, there's the sweet spot of the realms, right? Where it's like the human realm, compared to the other realms, like the hell realms, animal realms, and then like the Deva and the God realms, like the human realm is right in the middle. It's like we have an enough like well, suffering to kind of propel us, motivate us, and yet we're also incredibly intelligent and can manage our situation and find ways to navigate it. I think in the same way in like this life, sometimes like it's actually better to not have as much wealth, right? Because it's distracting. There's so much that we have to do with it. And same thing with being like extremely poor, like that's really, you know, not good conditions either. So like we find ourselves, I think, you know, a lot of us at the temple, you know, so grateful to have the conditions that we do. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it's hard to remember that, but the way that I like to think of it is that I discovered that the seed that sprouted in the garden, it found itself in an environment that had plenty of manure, right? Which was great because it gave me some fuel, gave me what I needed, right? In order to do to practice, it gave me something to work with, right? Some resistance and some troubles, but also not too much. Right, so I don't get burnt, by having too much of the manure. So it's like the right mixture here. Us humans are in a nice garden environment.
of course, either way, we will do our best to not, depend on those external conditions, because even the Buddha went through the hells. So I don't want to do that, but maybe someday I'll be ready for that. We'll see.
Well, yeah, heck man, I got nothing to say about that.
Yeah, I guess I've been in my own little hells here, in my own special ways. So
Yeah,
yeah,
there is,
I'll go through it.
there's a part of me that to the degree that I've already participated in the God and Hell realms in previous lifetimes, there's a part of me that would like to just sort of like remember, so I know what that's like, right? But there is that same part is not particularly interested in pursuing either direction. Like I'm like, I don't, I like the sweet spot I'm in.
Yeah, totally. I feel you. So who is this wonderful statue?
Have you ever heard of Bodhisattva Vajrayana?
I haven't.
Well, this is Bodhisattva Vajrayana.
Very nice.
But look at that
Very
meditation
good.
posture. That's amazing.
Yeah, cool. All
Good stuff.
right.
All right, it's enough
Thanks,
of that.
Bojan Slogan Generator.
Yeah. All right, Jack, what's your biggest challenge in meditation?
We're just jumping right in. All
Let's do it.
right. Getting in there. Well, I was thinking a lot when I was kind of exploring these challenges. Of course, there's like the standards, right? Like there's the standards of excitement and lethargy. So excitement being like, okay, there's a bunch going on. It's kind of chaotic. I'm list making, I'm ruminating, I'm planning ahead, fantasizing, all those things. And then there's le lethargy, which for me ends up being like I'm not really applying myself in the meditation. Maybe I kind of recognize I'm off base, but I'm not applying antidotes. I don't really fall asleep in my meditation, so that's not a problem. But I think I wanted to talk a little bit more about those ones that maybe I don't necessarily think about that much. And so excitement, lethargy. Super important ones. You should read Calming the Mind if you haven't. Get it, read it 10 times. That's what I've been told by Lama Jinpa. I'm almost five. It's very slim, so you can do it. Yes, I wanted to explore some of the other ones. If what do you think?
Let's do it. Yeah, let's just pick
Okay,
one.
great. So one that I recognize in myself is that I oftentimes just want to do something else. Does that happen for you where it's like, okay, I've got my meditation schedule. I know what I'm doing for the day in terms of training. But sometimes I'd kind of rather just like read a book, like a fiction novel, or maybe watch some TV. Like sometimes I just want to like veg out and not do the whole meditation thing. Does that happen for you?
Not that much. No, I
Oh.
think simply because I'm not actually mindful enough. I'm not watching my mind well enough because I think that in truth, I think there is actually some of that going on possibly. Especially, what I notice is so I my meditation practice at home is primarily early in the morning, right?
Yeah.
And I wake up really early in order to do that meditation practice, right? So I set everything out the night before. I'm like, so my intention going to bed, I'm like, there it is. This is my like meditation setup. It's all right. And then I got the early alarms and stuff. And so then I have this whole sort of like ritual around it. And I'm doing this in order to meditate. So there is no feeling other than possibly, wouldn't it be nice to keep sleeping?
Yeah.
But even there, I have a certain enthusiasm for the meditation practice. Yeah, I know. I
Diligence,
know, I know.
the
I
diligence,
do. And,
Daniel.
well, I have this good friend who told me that it's good to have a non-negotiable meditation
I
practice.
gotta remember that.
Yeah. Do you remember who might have said that, Jack? So, yeah, it is actually somewhat, it is non-negotiable in that sense. Where I notice me sort of slipping a bit is when my schedule is a little bit different than other people, like, so like that particular waking up early or whatever is like 4 or 5 days a week. But then there's a couple of days per week where I don't, like, I'm not necessarily going to be waking up really early. And so the day will have already started. And that's in those situations, it's oftentimes not a feeling of I would rather be doing something else. It doesn't really present itself that way. It's more like I have all these other things I just need to
Yeah.
do, right? I got to do this, I got to do that. I'll meditate this evening, or I'll squeeze it in somewhere else, right? And there's that sort of mentality that definitely shows.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, there's so much many pressures in our lives, with being householder yogis, like we've got jobs and you have children, like these are really important pressures. So it sounds like one thing that helps you is like having the non-negotiable practice. What else?
Yeah, the other thing that's incredibly helpful. So when I what I do now is I recognize that if I so it's really first of all, the part that's really helpful for maintaining the practice is this very clear intentionality, right? So like it's way ahead of time. I'm prepping, I'm aware, I know I'm gonna do this, planning for it, I'm motivated for it. In that case, it sort of builds up this energy, this sort of current where I'm likely to go ahead and do it, right? When that's not there, what happens is I have to notice those little lies I'm telling myself. Oh, I'm going to do it later, or something else is more important. But I ba balance it with this sort of like, wait a second. So what I'm used to doing is a certain process, right? It's a certain meditation sort of process. It's from some preliminary practice, and then there's actual, meditative practice. Which lasts a certain amount of times. And what I notice is that if I let go of that, the need to do it a certain way, to follow a pattern, right? And instead I say, what I'd really like to do is just make sure that I have a consistent practice. And I'm going to go ahead and just sit for 3 minutes or 6 minutes. I'm not even going to use my cushion. I'm just going to sit somewhere convenient, somewhere that's quiet enough, And I'm just gonna just sit for a minute. It's okay, right? Like it doesn't have to be this whole formal practice. It doesn't have to be for a certain amount of time. And that is really helpful because then I give myself a little bit of like, it counters that. So like when my mind, I'm like, well, I don't have an hour and whatever in order to do it, right? So like that part of my mind is given a little outlet. Like I'm kind of telling myself, no, actually you could just do a little something.
Yeah.
Right? And that little side, it's the consistency. It's the maintaining that intention, that motivation, that desire to keep going, even if it's just one step, right? Even if it's just a tiny little bit, that is valuable. In fact, our friend Matthew, he said something that was so valuable to me one time. So Sue and Matthew, our good friends, do the beginner's meditation instruction at Lion's Roar Dharma Center, both of them offering superb advice when it
Yeah.
comes to meditation. Okay, so Sue's advice is like, hey, even 3 minutes, it's fine. Six minutes, 3 minutes, that's fine. Just do it every day. That's okay, right? That's what Sue says, and that's been excellent advice. Matthew says, if you're not going to meditate, recognize that you're not going to meditate.
Yeah.
And a good way to do that is simply to look at your cushion and put your hand on it and just say, I'm not going to meditate today.
Wow.
Right? And
What does that do? What does that do for your mind?
so what's amazing about it is I have done this on a number of occasions. And in almost every one of those situations, what happens is my hand touches the cushion and then I follow Sue's advice.
Yeah.
Right? So first I
Yep.
take Matthew's advice. And that gets me there, right? And then I'm like, well, I've got 3 minutes.
Right.
I'm here. My hand is touching the cushion, literally. And
Right.
I could just do what Sue says, right?
Yeah.
And I could meditate 3 or 6 minutes, and then it's beautiful and it's water, and I feel good. Oh, it's
I love that. That's such a nice little kind of like Jedi mind trick for our mind, right? Where it's like we're just gonna touch the cushion, and then it's that gateway that opens up to like, okay, fine, we'll do three, we'll do six, we'll do 24,
Yeah, so that's how it shows up for me. You know, like there's it's pretty rare nowadays where I think to myself, I'd rather be whatever, watching TV or watching or something. Like that doesn't happen.
Totally. No, I think that's those are such great little tokens of advice there. And for me, I think what's been really helpful, Llama has told me numerous times that this kind of like resistance around like, oh, but how about I just like do something else for a bit, or like, oh, but meditation is boring, because I really have that sometimes too, where I'm like, I'm bored. Is to really that means that I'm probably not doing a consistent reflection on the four thoughts that turn the mind to Dharma. And so those are, reflections on that we have a human life, this precious human life, which we talked about during Lojong, that things are impermanent, that there's cause and effect, karma, and that samsara is suffering. And so without consistently reflecting on those, what happens? We kind of start to lose this quality of gratitude for where we're at, right? That we have this opportunity. Start to kind of like solidify things, like, oh, but I've got this, this work stuff I have to do, like kind of get into our different identities, right? All these roles that we have to fulfill.
Worldly concerns.
It worldly concerns. We start to think, or not even think about like what kind of effect that has on our mind, right? This karma of, when I sit or when I don't sit, what kind of effect is that having on my mind? And then of course, if we're not thinking about how samsara sucks, we're kind of like, hey, this is all right, like
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
fine, I can do this,
If you
I
add enough
can
chocolate, samsara is okay.
right, exactly. And so really having to, because my mind is very excited, and so we really have to sober the mind sometimes. Genlam Rinpa in Calming the Mind talks about that a lot, that we're depressing the mind, not in a sad way, but just bringing down that like kind of like, ah, samsara, let's do it. I want to do all the samsaric things, but like, no, let's kind of bring it to reality. And so that's really helpful for me. And I
Yeah.
even do that within meditation itself. I'll do a quick kind of analytical meditation on one or two of the four thoughts, just to be like, hey, you here?
Yeah.
you with me?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really helpful.
Which can I ask? Do you notice which one or two pop up the most frequently for you in terms of?
I definitely tend towards reflecting on impermanence and the law of karma.
Interesting. Mine is the first one, preciousness of this life is human life, and impermanence. What I don't actually notice a lot of the karma aspect of it, and I don't think I'm aware of the samsara sucks part of it, but it's not something that I focus on too much. Primarily, impermanence combined with this precious life, right? Because one of the things I recognize actually is when I really actually reflect on the preciousness, not just like, oh, I was born human, I could have been born, in the hell realms or something like that. Not even like that, but more along the lines, like even as a human being. So there's 8 billion people on the planet, and throughout human history, there's been plenty more. And there's a wide range, even though, the human gap, the band, the whatever the bandwidth or whatever you want to call it, is fairly limited. We are quite similar. The range within there is quite large, right? And not only that, but like there are a lot of people who have not met the Dharma, right? Who haven't found a teacher, who don't have a sangha, right? They don't have a teacher. They haven't acquired the
Three root causes.
causes. Thank you. The
Yeah.
three root
Okay, good.
causes. And when I start to really reflect on what that has done for me and what that looks like, how that feels, when I can feel it in my heart, oh, I'm like, okay, right, yeah, I want to do this.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Those are good ones. How about Daniel? What about the challenge of what I like to call chasing the dragon? And what I mean by that is that you have one of those meditation sessions where it's like a blowout experience, right? You're just like sitting on cloud nine, like blissed out. It kind of feels like you've got some little reflection of emptiness, you know, maybe feeling a little bit cool about that, you know? And then the next day you go and sit on the cushion and it's like, why am I not feeling that way? What is that obstacle like for you? I feel like sometimes I've had some disappointments for sure.
I would say that I almost sort of ruined those moments when they happen,
Yeah, totally in
because,
the moment, right?
right,
Yeah.
like as it's happening, there is this sort of like, it won't be like this forever, sort of, you know, like this too is going to end. I'm just having it. This is a temporal experience, right? Yes, and it's good and it's encouraging, it's uplifting, it's whatever it is. But even in that experience, I notice sometimes this sort of part of me that's like, okay, but like it's also gonna, man, it's also gonna be hard, you know? And so it's almost like I can't quite accept those beautiful experiences. They're there, you know,
Yeah.
but even in the moment, I sort of am like, meh, impermanence, you know. And so I don't think I don't struggle too much with wanting to replicate those experiences. There is this sort of like, you know, yeah, there's a wish for it. You know, there's sometimes where I'm sitting there meditating and it's just hard work. It just feels like a hard workout, you know. And I just think like, God, wouldn't that be nice? Like, right. Like I'm sort of actually, so part of that same, it's all working out, it's all, you know, that same mindset does show up sometimes in meditation, where it's because what I'll notice, okay, this is how it shows up.
Yeah, yeah,
So what happens in my sits is that I'll sometimes have mini, mini realizations, tiny or experience or whatever you want to
yeah.
call it. It's a blowout experience, but it's little compared to the rest of the sit. So it oftentimes surprises me. So I'll just be sitting there. It's just an ordinary old day. I'm just doing my art, you know, nothing different, nothing special going on. And all of a sudden, oh, right? And that'll happen, and then it'll end in the sit, right? It's not like the whole sit is like it, not like the whole big experience. It's just a little one. So what happens, this is a part of my distraction in meditation, is if I'm sitting there not having one of those experiences, I'm like, it's just right around the corner. It's around that bend right there. It's over that hill. It just hang on, right? Because it's
Yeah.
coming. It's going to be here. And then I have to sort of be like, no.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's going to be there or not,
Right. Well, and you know how critically important it is to remind ourselves that those moments of it feeling like a drag, you know, of it being the slog, those are also experiences of emptiness, right? You know, of interdependent arising.
That's right.
And so, you know, even like I don't have you know, at all a direct experience of those things, but if I can kind of reflect, like, okay, I know that this isn't like the blissed out version that I like. This is also, you know, my, you know, the text, our teachers are telling us that this too, right? All of it is interdependence. So, you know, if I find that if I can kind of like try and marinate in that a little bit, even without like that direct knowledge of emptiness, like there's a little bit of like a like kind of an oh, okay, ah moment.
Right.
That's really cool, you know? And it's not
It
like the big old bliss thing, but it's like, okay. Right on.
You
Yeah.
know, though, you know what though? I think if my experience is any indicator, there is kind of a sign that one of those cool, interesting experiences is around the corner. Okay. So this is
Are you gonna give us the
not a formula, it's pretty basic.
formula?
So the way that it appears for me, when I know, like the biggest, most wonderful sort of like ahas or experiences or whatever, they show up on the other side of resistance. So what happens is if I notice resistance, sometimes I'll pull back and I'll kind of give in to whatever that resistance is. But if I persevere, right, if I stay with it and I overcome the resistance or use it to like push off, right, then something big is on the other side of that. Some, you know, like the bigger the resistance, the better the thing that's on the other. It's almost like a little trick, right? Like if this was a video game, it'd be like, stay away from here, don't go in here. But in fact, that's where the treasure is. It's right there on the other side of resistance.
It's true. Is gosh, it's one of those like so like obvious like maxims of life, right? That it's like the difficulties are where like the beauty is,
That's the
you
good
know.
stuff.
It's the good stuff. Damn it. Oh man. Well, how about so there's some, you know, some other things that I run into. One is simply just physical pain, right? Like that's just such a common obstacle and challenge. And fortunately, I don't have a ton of physical pain in my meditation right now, but I do get really kind of like focused on it when it happens. So yeah, I've been kind of like working with what do I do? You know, do I just kind of is it sittable, right? Like is it something that I can sit through? And then I'll try and just kind of like return to my meditation. And so it's kind of like knowing, okay, like knowing my limits, right? And knowing what is actual pain versus like just discomfort. And I think like when it's into the pain realm, like yeah, like I'm like I should move. But what do you think?
It seems reasonable to me. I think that, like you said, knowing the pain actually is the first step. So we have such a high pain avoidance, sort of whatever. We're so good at pain avoidance and so motivated to avoid pain that it kind of comes like we have every human being has all kinds of means to avoid it, right, or to deal with it. But in meditation itself, I think that, you know, first again, getting, you know, taking the time to set up properly, that means, you know, not having a particularly rigid idea of the way it's supposed to look. I think a lot of times people have, they think, oh, I have to, you know, be sitting like, what was his name in the picture?
Our friend that was at the silver statue.
And that you just need to be in full lotus. And oh, there, I notice actually sometimes it feels like beginners at the meditations, you know, in the meditations, they'll kind of limit themselves to just one cushion, you know? And I know
Oh,
I was the
dear.
same way, or maybe they'll even go without a cushion. And I think to myself, like, oh my God, like, this looks uncomfortable. I know because I was there. I used to do that. I used to force myself into postures and stuff that I thought were right, and it hurt me actually. And pretty, you know, and it was. And it limits practice. So I think taking the time to set up properly, giving your body what it needs, you know, some people cook extra cushions or whatever, a blanket if you get cold easily, that kind of stuff. Making sure you have a good supportive environment, I think that's really important. And then when pain does arise, I think we have to become familiar with it, right? So like I like to make pain an object of meditation and really direct my attention towards it because it turns out not as a way to get rid of it. But rather just as an exploration, I'm curious. I want to feel, I want to see that pain. I want to know what it tastes like. I want to know what it feels like. I want to know what it, you know, looks like, all of that. And I want to know where it is. You know, so like when you're sitting there, it's interesting that like, okay, pain, physical pain will present in a particular part of the body. But when you're just looking sort of at the mental body, so to speak, The pain might actually show up somewhere else. It's kind of strange, right? And so it's an interesting, it's kind of interesting. We can be curious about it. What's really fascinating is that just like all the other objects of concentration, we can't actually stay all that focused on it. So if you really focus and become like intimately familiar with the pain, you'll notice it shifts. It may not go away, but it shifts, it moves, and it's not staying the same, right?
And isn't that incredible that, just the same thing happens for, with mental pain,
That's right.
physical pain and mental pain. There have been times in meditation where I've had like really intense anger come up, really intense sadness, love, all like big emotions, right? And it's fascinating because it seems like, wow, like I've really found something, that it's like, oh, this is like the depth of this emotion. And yet within even seconds, it's shifted, right? And certainly by the end of the meditation, usually it's subsided. There might be some like lingering feelings, but and I think that's so important for people who are starting out meditating to know is that like sometimes big emotions come up or even scary stuff. And in the beginning, we have to be really careful, right? Like slow it down
Gentle.
into meditation if it's too intense. Speak with people who
Yeah.
are doing meditation and know how to do it, right? But to understand too that like these things are sh shifting, they're fluctuating.
Yeah.
We can learn how to work with them. That is one certainty that I've had in my meditation training is that, I know, even if just a little bit more, that like I know how to work with my mind, and I didn't, I didn't used to, and not that
Yeah.
it's perfect now, but I know a lot more how to
Yeah.
work with my mind, and that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And when it comes to I'm thinking primarily physical pain, but any kind of discomfort like that. I think that it's really important to recognize that we do want to honor ourselves, and we're not here. We're not trying to do some kind of austerities, or we're not into what do you call it, like self-flagellation.
Yeah, no punishment in this
That's
game.
not what this is about, right? It does require effort, right? It does require that you stick with it and have some consistency. But other than that, there's no reward, for suffering through the pain. And I think, the kinds of pain like a lot of people experience. Okay, so there are all kinds of back pains and migraines and things like that that people suffer from. I'm not talking about that, but when it comes to like just normal pains that most people suffer in when they are learning to meditate or as they do meditation, it's usually things like their lower back or their legs kind of being uncomfortable. And I think that if you recognize that it's off and that somehow like it's your situation is not improving and it's causing you to be super distracted, for me, I'll get up, stand up, I'll wait a minute, and then I just sort of like I'll rearrange my cushions, and then I'll sit back down and be like, okay, is that better? So honoring ourselves and respecting our bodies,
Absolutely. Yep, and honoring our minds, honoring our emotions, our bodies, we're important, we're worth it.
That's
So
why we're doing this, Pat.
that's why we're doing it. Yes, that's right. Daniel, I can't believe it's already 8 o'clock.
These are
How did we
fun.
get here?
This was a good conversation. That was
It was a
fun.
great conversation. I hope it was useful, folks. I enjoy talking about meditation. And it's really it helps me kind of know where I'm at. So I'm glad that we had this discussion tonight. Thank you, Daniel.
Me too, me too. One of these days, you know what I'd like to talk about one of these days, Jack?
Like that.
I want to talk about the image, the path of shamatha, right? The
Love that.
picture of the path with the monk and the monkeys and the elephant and all of that stuff. That'd be
Yeah,
kind of fun.
that would be fun. There's so much in that image. It's really inspiring. So I'd love that. All right,
Thank you so
everybody.
much, Jack, and everybody else.
Thank you, Daniel. See you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.